Speaking about another fantastic project, if you will, so to speak. Of course, climate change has been on everybody's mind, of, I would say, for the last decade, more so in the last few years with regards to the time we have left, what they're calling D-Day, the day of no return. When is it too late? And a lot of the scientific community would suggest that that would be in about 10 to 12 years. If we don't affect a significant change by that time, we're out of luck. Well, my next guest, a professor of economics at the University of Guelph, specializes in environmental economics and policy analysis. His name is Ross McKittrick, and he joins us now to talk about his views and opinions on that whole thing. Good morning, Ross. How are you?
Morning, John. I'm fine, thanks.
John is the other guy. I'm Angelo, but that's okay. Don't worry about that.
Sorry.
Angelo. No, don't worry about it. John's our producer. Ross, you also author books. One's taken by storm, The Trouble Science, Policy and Politics of Global Warming. So you're no stranger to this whole subject, and there is a bit of controversy that that maybe we should be starting the discussions with, and that is, do you believe we have 10 years?
Well, I didn't believe it 20 years ago when we heard we had 10 years, and I have difficulty believing it today for the same reason. I tend to immerse myself in these reports, like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports. I'm an expert reviewer for them, and I read a lot of the science literature as well as the economics policy literature. That 10 years doesn't mean it's the end of the world, the climate goes haywire, the point of no return kind of language. What that means is if you wanted to hit a certain emissions target or a concentration target for CO2 in the atmosphere, then you would need to have the policies in place on a fairly aggressive basis over the next 10 years to do it.
Okay.
But that 10-year notion came out of a recent report. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change put a group together, and they were asked, can you tell us what's the difference between if we had 2 degrees of warming versus 1.5 degrees of warming? And the most of the report is exactly what you would expect. If you have 1.5 degrees of warming, you would get a certain amount of change. If you have 2 degrees of warming, you'll have a bit more change. And it really comes down to a message about as simple as that. And they said, if you want to limit to 1.5 degrees of warming, you've got about 10 years to really get some aggressive policies in place. That got rephrased in the media coverage as, we have 10 years to save the world or it's all over. When you say, do we have 10 years left, it depends what it is you want to do. If you want to hit some of those really aggressive cumulative emission targets, then yes, you have about 10 years left. If you are going to do an Al Gore-type message of the world is going to end in 10 years, that I don't know where that comes from.
And that's probably the one that resonates most with folks, right? It's always the worst one, and that is the world is coming to an end in 10 years. And that's and I also understand that opposing that view openly is not a healthy career move for most scientists. I've heard rumblings that there's a lot of folks out there in the know that are sitting back in their chair because, quite frankly, it's a disaster if they come out and say, wait a minute, I'm not sure about these numbers.
Last summer I told the story of one such scientist. I wrote a column in the National Post about a fellow named Roger Pilkey Jr., who is quite a well-known scientist who specializes in extreme weather meteorology. And for a couple of decades, he worked as a leader in the field. He convened major panels. He contributed to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and groups like that. And his message, which was very solidly backed up in the data, was that although the climate models say there will probably be some trends in these things in the future, up to this point, we don't see trends in the data in things like flooding or extreme precipitation or droughts or hurricane formation or the kind of big headline items that people look at and that the politicians like to talk about as being inextricably linked to climate change. See, nobody's terribly worried about a little bit of warming over 100 years. Where you get all the traction with public opinion is if you tell people this means storms, floods, droughts, hurricanes, all that sort of stuff. But we have a lot of data on all of that. So Pielke Jr., he had organized some consensus statements on this to say we don't really have any evidence that over the past 50 years there's been any upward trend in these measures. Well, he got attacked for that really badly, even though he had very solid data on his side. He ended up dealing with a lot of politically motivated attacks on his work. So he finally quit the field and he switched his academic position out of the climate area. And then that column that I wrote, that got attacked really badly. It to this day, you can't share it on Facebook. Facebook censors will stop you from sharing it around.
Wow.
I wrote a follow-up column on it because people had complained about, I was paraphrasing the reports, and they didn't believe it. So I wrote a follow-up column a week later where the column is really nothing but direct extended quotes from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and Environment Canada and the other major bodies that have issued reports on these things. And it's clear as day that this is what the experts have said. This is what the data said. Maybe these trends will appear in the future, but to this point, we don't see them. And it's such a stark contrast with what people are being told every day that, they have trouble believing it and trouble believing that that's actually what's in the expert reports.
Ross, can you sit tight with us for a couple more minutes? I've got to take a break, and I want to ask you, you know, the question that everybody listening wants me to ask you, and that is, where are we in the overall picture here in terms of emissions and greenhouse gases? So sit tight for one second, my friend. We're going to take a quick break. More journal after this, don't you dare go away. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angelo Biola, Stephen Labadie, Derek Brandeo, Justin Ryan Manitad on the board today. New person on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the A team.
It's the B team.
The B team.
Sure.
No disrespect to Justin Ryan.
Oh.
No. All right. On the phone with us, he's an A team member for sure. His name is Ross McKintrick, and he is a professor of economics with the University of Guelph. And we're talking about this whole global warming, but more importantly, not just that, the 10-year mandate, if you will, that has been imposed by most of the scientific community. Well, no, let me take that back. Not most of them. Certainly the ones that are in the position to verbalize their opinion that if we don't do something in the next 10 years, it's too late. You might as well throw in the towel and pack it all in. She's all over. Ross says maybe not. But more importantly, there are scientists who may not agree with that assessment, but they're being held back from sharing that with us in most cases, including Facebook. I'm absolutely appalled to hear that, Ross, that Facebook actually censors papers, scientific papers on opinions. It's crazy. But it's true. I have no reason to doubt you. Ross, I wanted to ask you, in your opinion, first of all, so are you one of these folks who doesn't necessarily think that that 10-year window is hard fast?
There are two trends that you should keep an eye on as far as the policy side goes. So
yes.
Total global emissions of carbon dioxide, that's the main greenhouse gas we're talking about, those just tend to go up over time when population goes up. There's just no avoiding that. And, I've been working on this topic since the early 1990s, and I've seen heroic policy measures put in place, and nothing has changed that trend because it's so closely tied to energy use. And
yep.
People need energy. They need fuel. They need heat, transportation. And so as the global population goes up, those emissions are going to go up. But the other trend that's really important is the emissions per dollar of GDP, and that's our measure of efficiency. And those have been trending down for decades. And that one really isn't a product of policy even. That's just a matter of we get more and more clever and more efficient every year in how we use energy. And Canada, the United States, Europe, these countries have very steady, long-standing downward trends in the amount of energy that we use to produce a dollar of GDP over time. And so when we talk about what can we do over the next 10 years, global population is going to keep growing. All the people in those other countries, they want energy. They deserve the same standard of living that we have, and they're going to pursue it. And we're not going to stop it, and we shouldn't try. But what we can do is keep getting more efficient in our own use of energy, and we're actually on a very good trajectory for that. So I would say we've established a good pattern in countries like Canada and the United States in just internally in the way that we improve our efficiency, and that's going to eventually balance out the changes in population so that 10 years from now, I do think we would probably see those global emissions peak and begin to trend downward, and that'll partly be driven by population peaking in the world, but also just because these improvements in efficiency eventually will overtake population growth.
Now, if you look at our report card, though, the federal government so far has not been able to hit the targets that were established. And in fact, CO2 emissions have increased of late. Mm-hmm. So we're not, you know, we're not necessarily doing our part, if I read this correctly.
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock in those targets, though. What happens is they all get together. Last time it was in Paris. Before that, it was in Kyoto, Japan. They get together in these giant meeting halls, and they pick targets out of the air with no idea how they're going to meet them or what it would cost or whether it's the right target to pick. And they all want to preen and look good for the cameras. And, you know, you said you'll 20% target, then we'll do a 30% target. And then they go home and realize we have no idea how we're going to do this. 20 years ago, Canada picked a very ambitious target when the Chrétien government was in power. And they came home and they just quietly put it on the shelf because they realized we have no way of hitting that target. We'll do what we can, but we're not going to kill ourselves to get to that target. And it's exactly the same thing happening now. So I would say just don't bother looking at that target specifically. It's really pretty meaningless. The thing to look at, like I say, is the measures of things that we can actually accomplish, especially these trends in energy improvement and just those small incremental changes that we all tend to make where we just to save money, you tend to become more efficient and over time. And on that score, we're actually doing pretty well.
Well, it sounds pretty positive, Ross. We appreciate you sharing that with us, and we would like to welcome you on board. Anytime you have information in the subject, by all means, please let us know, and we can spread the good word. I'm still amazed that, and I'm sure you have your facts, that you said that Facebook actually restricted a piece from being published on Facebook. That blows
my
mind.
It was an article. I published it in the National Post last summer. It was really just telling that story of Roger Pilkey Jr. and quoting from the reports. And I've been hearing for a while now from people who try to share it on Facebook and it gets blocked. And even if you try to a private direct message on Facebook, it gets blocked. And like I said, when I first got criticism about that policy, that column, I wrote a follow-up where I just quoted directly from the reports just so nobody would think I was making this up. And and yet still to this day, Facebook won't allow that column to be shared.
That's mind-boggling. I mean, first of all, it's mind-boggling that we have that kind of censorship going on. But secondly, just even the technology to be able to figure out that's your column that's being put out by somebody else, the whole thing blows my mind. It's craziness. It's insanity.
Yes, it is. So, anyways, I hope you guys stay warm this morning. I know a big storm's coming through, but
it's bad.
We're all used to that.
Yeah, for sure. Ross, thanks again. You take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Angela. Bye-bye.
Professor Ross McKittrick from the University of Guelph. Wow, that's kind of an eye-opener, isn't it?
Very interesting.